Remembering Melody, read for you by Scott Brick. Ted was shaving when the doorbell sounded. It startled him so badly that he cut himself. His condominium was on the 32nd floor, and Jack, the doorman, generally gave him advance warning of any prospective visitors. This had to be someone from the building, then. Except that Ted didn't know anyone in the building, at least not beyond the trade smiles in the elevator level. "Coming!" he shouted. Scowling, he snatched up a towel and wiped the lather from his face, then dabbed at his cut with a tissue. "Shit," he said loudly to his face in the mirror. He had to be in court this afternoon. If this was another Jehovah's Witness like the one who'd gotten past Jack last month, they were going to be in for a very rough time indeed. The buzzer buzzed again. "Coming, damn it!" Ted yelled. He made a final dab at the blood on his neck, then threw the tissue into a wastebasket and strode across the sunken living room to the door. He peered through the eye hole carefully before he opened. "Oh, shit," he muttered. Before she could buzz again, Ted slid off the chain and threw open the door. "Hello, Melody," he said. She smiled wanly.
"Hi, Ted," she replied.
She had an old suitcase in her hand, a battered cloth bag with a hideous red and black plaid pattern, its broken handle replaced by a length of rope. The last time Ted had seen her, 3 years before, she'd looked terrible. Now she looked worse. Her clothes, shorts and a tie-dyed T-shirt, were wrinkled and dirty and emphasized how gaunt she'd become. Her ribs showed through plainly. Her legs were pipe stems. Her long, stringy blonde hair hadn't been washed recently, and her face was red and puffy, as if she'd been crying. That was no surprise. Melody was always crying about one thing or another.
"Aren't you going to ask me in, Ted?"
Ted grimaced. He certainly didn't want to ask her in. He knew from past experience how difficult it was to get her out again. But he couldn't just leave her standing in the hall with her suitcase in hand. After all, he thought sourly, she was an old and dear friend. "Oh, sure," he said. He gestured. "Come on in." He took her bag from her and set it by the door, then led her into the kitchen and put on some water to boil. "You look as though you could use a cup of coffee," he said, trying to keep his voice friendly. Melody smiled again.
"Don't you remember, Ted? I don't drink coffee. It's no good for you, Ted. I used to tell you that. Don't you remember?"
She got up from the kitchen table and began rummaging through his cupboards.
"Do you have any hot chocolate?" she asked. "I like hot chocolate."
"I don't drink hot chocolate," he said. "Just a lot of coffee."
"You shouldn't," she said. "It's no good for you."
"Yeah," he said. "Do you want juice? I've got juice." Melody nodded.
"Fine."
He poured her a glass of orange juice and led her back to the table, then spooned some Maxim into a mug while he waited for his kettle to whistle. "So," he asked, "what brings you to Chicago?" Melody began to cry. Ted leaned back against the stove and watched her. She was a very noisy crier, and she produced an amazing amount of tears for someone who cried so often. She didn't look up until the water began to boil. Ted poured some into his cup and stirred in a teaspoon of sugar. Her face was redder and more puffy than ever, her eyes fixed on him accusingly.
"Things have been real bad," she said. "I need help, Ted. I don't have any place to live. I thought maybe I could stay with you a while. Things have been real bad."
"I'm sorry to hear that, Melody," Ted replied, sipping at his coffee thoughtfully. "You can stay here for a few days if you want, but no longer. I'm not in the market for a roommate." She always made him feel like such a bastard, but it was better to be firm with her right from the start, he thought. Melody began to cry again when he mentioned roommates.
You used to say I was a good roommate, she whined. We used to have fun, don't you remember? You were my friend.
Ted set down his coffee mug and looked at the kitchen clock. I don't have time to talk about old times right now, he said. I was shaving when you rang. I've got to get to the office. He frowned. Drink your juice and make yourself at home. I've got to get dressed. He turned abruptly and left her weeping at the kitchen table. Back in the bathroom, Ted finished shaving and tended to his cut more properly, his mind full of melody. Already he could tell that this was going to be difficult. He felt sorry for her. She was messed up and miserably unhappy, with no one to turn to. But he wasn't going to let her inflict all her troubles on him. Not this time. She'd done it too many times before. In his bedroom, Ted stared pensively into the closet for a long time before selecting the gray suit. He knotted his tie carefully in the mirror, scowling at his cut. Then he checked his briefcase to make sure all the papers on the Cindio case were in order, nodded, and walked back into the kitchen. Melody was at the stove, making some pancakes. She turned and smiled at him happily when he entered.
You remember my pancakes, Ted? She asked. You used to love it when I made pancakes, especially blueberry pancakes, you remember? You didn't have any blueberries, though, so I'm just making plain. Is that all right?
Jesus, Ted muttered. Damn it, Melody, who said you should make anything? I told you, I had to get to the office. I don't have time to eat with you. I'm late already. Anyway, I don't eat breakfast. I'm trying to lose weight.
Tears began to trickle from her eyes again. But these are my special pancakes, Ted. What am I going to do with them? What am I going to do?
Eat them, Ted said. You could use a few extra pounds.
Jesus, you look terrible. You look like you haven't eaten for a month.
Melody's face screwed up and became ugly.
You bastard, she said. You're supposed to be my friend.
Ted sighed.
Take it easy, he said.
He glanced at his watch. Look, I'm 15 minutes late already. I've got to go. You eat your pancakes and get some sleep. I'll be back around 6. We can have dinner together and talk, all right? Is that what you want?
That would be nice, she said, suddenly contrite. That would be real nice.
Tell Jill I want to see her in my office right away, Ted snapped to the secretary when he arrived. And get us some coffee, will you? I really need some coffee.
Sure.
Jill arrived a few minutes after the coffee. She and Ted were associates in the same law firm. He motioned her to a seat and pushed a cup at her. Sit down, he said. Look, the date's off tonight. I've got problems.
You look it, she said. What's wrong?
An old friend showed up on my doorstep this morning, he said. Jill arched one elegant eyebrow.
So, she said, reunions can be fun.
Not with Melody, they can't.
Melody, she said. A pretty name. An old flame, Ted? What is it, unrequited love?
No, he said. No, it wasn't like that.
Tell me what it was like then.
You know I love the gory details. Melody and I were roommates back in college. Not just us. Don't get the wrong idea. There were 4 of us. Me and a guy named Michael Engelhart, Melody and another girl, Anne Kay. The 4 of us shared a big old run-down house for 2 years. We were friends.
Friends.
Jill looked skeptical. Ted scowled at her.
Friends, he repeated.
Oh, hell. I slept with Melody a few times. With Anne, too. And both of them fucked Michael a time or two. But when it happened, it was just
kind of friendly, you know? Our love life was mostly with outsiders. We used to tell each other our troubles, swap advice, cry on one another's shoulders. Hell, I know it sounds weird. It was 1970, though. I had hair down to my ass. Everything was weird. He sloshed the dregs of his coffee around in the cup and looked pensive. There were good times, too. Special times. Sometimes I'm sorry they had to end. The four of us were close. Really close. I loved those people. Watch out, Jill said. I'll get jealous. My roommate and I cordially despised each other. She smiled. So what happened? Ted shrugged. The usual story, he said. We graduated, drifted apart. I remember the last night in the old house. We smoked a ton of dope and got very silly. Swore eternal friendship. We weren't ever going to be strangers, no matter what happened. And if any of us ever needed help, well, the other three would always be there. We sealed the bargain with, well, kind of an orgy. Jill smiled. Touching, she said. I never dreamed you had it in you. It didn't last, of course, Ted continued. We tried. I'll give us that much. But things changed too much. I went on to law school, wound up here in Chicago. Michael got a job with a publishing house in New York City. He's an editor at Random House now, been married and divorced, two kids. We used to write. Now we trade Christmas cards. Anne's a teacher. She was down in Phoenix the last I heard, but that was 4 or 5 years ago. Her husband didn't like the rest of us much, the one time we had a reunion. I think Anne must have told him about the orgy. And your house guest? Melody, he sighed. She became a problem. In college, she was wonderful. Gutsy, pretty, a real free spirit. But afterwards, she couldn't cut it. She tried to make it as a painter for a couple of years, but she wasn't good enough. Got nowhere. She went through a couple of relationships that turned sour, then married some guy about a week after she'd met him in a singles bar. That was terrible. He used to get drunk and beat her. She took about 6 months of it and finally got a divorce. He still came round to beat her up for a year until he finally got frightened off. After that, Melody got into drugs. Bad. She spent some time in an asylum. When she got out, it was more of the same. She can't hold a job or stay away from drugs. Her relationships don't last more than a few weeks. She's let her body go to hell. He shook his head. Jill pursed her lips. Sounds like a lady who needs help, she said. Ted flushed and grew angry. You think I don't know that? You think we haven't tried to help her? Jesus. When she was trying to be an artist, Michael got her a couple of cover assignments from the paperback house he was with. Not only did she blow the deadlines, but she got into a screaming match with the art director. Almost cost Michael his job. I flew to Cleveland and handled her divorce for her, gratis. Flew back a couple of months later and spent quite a while there trying to get the cops to give her protection against her ex-hubby. Anne took her in when she had no place to stay, got her into a drug rehabilitation program. In return, Melody tried to seduce her boyfriend. Said she wanted to share him like they'd done in the old days. All of us have lent her money. She's never paid back any of it. And we've listened to her troubles. God, but we've listened to her troubles. There was a period a few years ago when she'd phone every week, usually collect, with some new sad story. She cried over the phone a lot. If Queen for a Day was still on TV, Melody would be a natural. I'm beginning to see why you're not thrilled by her visit, Jill said dryly. What are you going to do?
I don't know, Ted replied. I shouldn't have let her in. The last few times she's called, I just hung up on her, and that seemed to work pretty well. Felt guilty about it at first, but that passed. This morning, though, she looked so pathetic that I didn't know how to send her away. I suppose eventually I'll have to get brutal and go through a scene. Nothing else works. She'll make a lot of accusations, remind me of what good friends we were and the promises we made, threaten to kill herself. Fun times ahead. Can I help? Jill asked.
Pick up my pieces afterwards, Ted said. It's always nice to have someone around afterwards. To tell you that you're not a son of a bitch, even though you just kicked an old dear friend out into the gutter. He was terrible in court that afternoon. His thoughts were full of Melody, and the strategies that most occupied him concerned how to get rid of her most painlessly instead of the case at hand. Melody had danced flamenco on his psyche too many times before. Ted wasn't going to let her leech off him this time, nor leave him an emotional wreck. When he got back to his condo with a bag of Chinese food under his arm, he'd decided he didn't want to take her out to a restaurant. Melody was sitting nude in the middle of his conversation pit, giggling and sniffing some white powder. She looked up at Ted happily when he entered.
Here, she said. I scored some coke.
Jesus, he swore. He dropped the Chinese food and his briefcase and strode furiously across the carpet.
I don't believe you, he roared. I'm a lawyer, for Christ's sakes. Do you want to get me disbarred?
Melody had the coke in a little paper square and was sniffing it from a rolled-up dollar bill. Ted snatched it all away from her and she began to cry. He went to the bathroom and flushed it down the toilet, dollar bill and all. Except it wasn't a dollar bill, he saw, as it was sucked out of sight. It was a 20. That made him even angrier. When he returned to the living room, Melody was still crying.
Stop that, he said. I don't want to hear it. And put some clothes on.
Another suspicion came to him.
Where did you get the money for that stuff? He demanded.
Huh? Where?
Melody whimpered.
I sold some stuff, she said in a timid voice. I didn't think you'd mind. It was good coke.
She shied away from him and threw an arm across her face, as if Ted was going to hit her. Ted didn't need to ask whose stuff she'd sold. He knew. She'd pulled the same trick on Michael years before, or so he'd heard. He sighed.
Get dressed, he repeated wearily. I brought Chinese food.
Later, he could check what was missing and phone the insurance company.
Chinese food is no good for you, Melody said. It's full of monosodium glutamate. Gives you headaches, Ted.
But she got to her feet obediently, if a bit unsteadily, went off towards the bathroom, and came back a few minutes later wearing a halter top and a pair of ratty cutoffs. Nothing else, Ted guessed. A couple of years ago, she must have decided that underwear was no good for you. Ignoring her comment about monosodium glutamate, Ted found some plates and served up the Chinese food in his dining nook. Melody ate it meekly enough, drowning everything in soy sauce. Every few minutes she giggled at some private joke, then grew very serious again and resumed eating. When she broke open her fortune cookie, a wide smile lit her face.
Look, Ted, she said happily, passing the little slip of paper across to him.
He read it. Old friends are the best friends, it said.
Oh, shit, he muttered.
He didn't even open his own. Melody wanted to know why.
You ought to read it, Ted, she told him. It's bad luck if you don't read your fortune cookie.
I don't want to read it, he said.
I'm going to change out of this suit. He rose. Don't do anything. But when he came back, she'd put an album on the stereo. At least she hadn't sold that, he thought gratefully.
Do you want me to dance for you? She asked. Remember how I used to dance for you and Michael? Real sexy. You used to tell me how good I dance. I could have been a dancer if I'd wanted.
She did a few steps in the middle of his living room, stumbled, and almost fell. It was grotesque. Sit down, Melody, Ted said, as sternly as he could manage. We have to talk. She sat down. Don't cry, he said before he started. You understand that? I don't want you to cry. We can't talk if you're going to cry every time I say anything. You start crying and this conversation is over. Melody nodded.
I won't cry, Ted, she said. I feel much better now than this morning. I'm with you now. You make me feel better.
You're not with me, Melody. Stop that. Her eyes filled up with tears.
You're my friend, Ted. You and Michael and Anne, you're the special ones.
He sighed. What's wrong, Melody? Why are you here?
I lost my job, Ted, she said.
The waitress job? He asked. The last time he'd seen her, 3 years ago, she'd been waiting tables in a bar in Kansas City. Melody blinked at him, confused.
Waitress? She said. No, Ted, that was before. That was in Kansas City. Don't you remember?
I remember very well, he said. What job was it you lost?
It was a shitty job, Melody said. A factory job. It was in Iowa, in Des Moines. Des Moines is a shitty place. I didn't come to work, so they fired me. I was strung out, you know. I needed a couple of days off. I would have come back to work, but they fired me.
She looked close to tears again.
I haven't had a good job in a long time, Ted. I was an art major. You remember? You and Michael and Anne used to have my drawings hung up in your rooms. You still have my drawings, Ted?
Yes, he lied. Sure. Somewhere. He'd gotten rid of them years ago. They reminded him too much of Melody, and that was too painful.
Anyway, when I lost my job, Johnny said I wasn't bringing in any money. Johnny was the guy I lived with. He said he wasn't going to support me, that I had to get some job, but I couldn't. I tried, Ted, but I couldn't. So Johnny talked to some man, and he got me this job in a massage parlor, you know. And he took me down there, but it was crummy. I didn't want to work in no massage parlor, Ted. I used to be an art major.
I remember, Melody, Ted said. She seemed to expect him to say something. Melody nodded.
So I didn't take it, and Johnny threw me out. I had no place to go, you know. And I thought of you and Anne and Michael. Remember the last night? We all said that if anyone ever needed help...
I remember, Melody, Ted said. Not as often as you do, but I remember. You don't ever let any of us forget it, do you? But let it pass. What do you want this time? His tone was flat and cold.
You're a lawyer, Ted, she said.
Yes.
So I thought...
Her long, thin fingers plucked nervously at her face.
I thought maybe you could get me a job. I could be a secretary, maybe, in your office. We could be together again every day, like it used to be. Or maybe,
she brightened visibly,
maybe I could be one of those people who draw pictures in the courtroom. You know, like Patty Hearst and people like that. On TV. I'd be good at that.
Those artists work for TV stations, Ted said patiently. And there are no openings in my office. I'm sorry, Melody. I can't get you a job. Melody took that surprisingly well.
All right, Ted, she said. I can find a job, I guess. I'll get one all by myself. Only let me live here, okay? We can be roommates again.
Oh, Jesus, Ted said. He sat back and crossed his arms. No, he said flatly. Melody took her hand away from her face and stared at him imploringly.
Please, Ted, she whispered. Please.
No, he said. The word hung there, chill and final.
You're my friend, Ted, she said. You promised.
You can stay here a week, he said. No longer. I have my own life, Melody. I have my own problems. I'm tired of dealing with yours. We all are. You're nothing but problems. In college, you were fun. You're not fun any longer. I've helped you and helped you and helped you. How fucking much do you want out of me? He was getting angrier as he talked. Things change, Melody, he said brutally. People change. You can't hold me forever to some dumb promise I made when I was stoned out of my mind back in college. I'm not responsible for your life. Tough up, damn it. Pull yourself together. I can't do it for you, and I'm sick of all your shit. I don't even like to see you anymore, Melody. You know that? She whimpered.
Don't say that, Ted. We're friends. You're special. As long as I have you and Michael and Anne, I'll never be alone, don't you see?
You are alone, he said. Melody infuriated him.
No, I'm not, she insisted.
I have my friends, my special friends. They'll help me.
You're my friend, Ted.
I used to be your friend, he replied. She stared at him, her lip trembling, hurt beyond words. For a moment he thought that the dam was going to burst, that Melody was finally about to break down and begin one of her marathon crying jags. Instead, a change came over her face. She paled perceptibly, and her lips drew back slowly, and her expression settled into a terrible mask of anger. She was hideous when she was angry.
You bastard, she said.
Ted had been this route, too. He got up from the couch and walked to his bar. Don't start, he said, pouring himself a glass of Chivas Regal on the rocks. The first thing you throw, you're out on your ass. Got that, Melody?
You scum, she repeated. You were never my friend. None of you were. You lied to me, made me trust you, used me. Now you're all so high and mighty, and I'm nothing, and you don't want to know me. You don't want to help me. You never wanted to help me.
I did help you, Ted pointed out, several times. You owe me something close to $2,000, I believe.
Money, she said. That's all you care about, you bastard.
Ted sipped at his scotch and frowned at her. Go to hell, he said.
I could, for all you care.
Her face had gone white.
I cabled you 2 years ago. I cabled all three of you. I needed you. You promised that you'd come if I needed you, that you'd be there. You promised that, and you made love to me, and you were my friend. But I cabled you, and you didn't come, you bastard. You didn't come. None of you came. None of you came.
She was screaming. Ted had forgotten about the telegram.
but it all came back to him in a rush. He'd read it over several times, and finally he'd picked up the phone and called Michael. Michael hadn't been in. So he'd reread the telegram one last time, then crumbled it up and flushed it down the toilet. One of the others could go to her this time, he remembered thinking. He had a big case, the Argrath Corporation patent suit, and he couldn't risk leaving it. But it had been a desperate telegram, and he'd been guilty about it for weeks until he finally managed to put the whole thing out of his mind. "I was busy," he said, his tone half angry and half defensive. "I had more important things to do than come hold your hand through another crisis." "It was horrible," Melody screamed. "I needed you, and you left me all alone. I almost killed myself." "But you didn't, did you?" "I could have," she said. "I could have killed myself, and you wouldn't have even cared." Threatening suicide was one of Melody's favorite tricks. Ted had been through it 100 times before. This time he decided not to take it. "You could have killed yourself," he said calmly, "and we probably wouldn't have cared. I think you're right about that. You would have rotted for weeks before anyone found you, and we probably wouldn't even have heard about it for half a year. And when I did hear, finally, I guess it would have made me sad for an hour or two, remembering how things had been, but then I would have gotten drunk or phoned up my girlfriend or something, and pretty soon I'd have been out of it. And then I could have forgotten all about you." "You would have been sorry," Melody said. "No," Ted replied. He strolled back to the bar and freshened his drink. "No, you know, I don't think I would have been sorry. Not in the least. Not guilty, either. So you might as well stop threatening to kill yourself, Melody, because it isn't going to work." The anger drained out of her face, and she gave a little whimper. "Please, Ted," she said. "Don't say such things. Tell me you'd care. Tell me you'd remember me." He scowled at her. "No," he said. It was harder when she was pitiful, when she shrunk up all small and vulnerable and whimpered instead of accusing him. But he had to end it once and for all, get rid of this curse on his life. "I'll go away tomorrow," she said meekly. "I won't bother you. But tell me you care, Ted. That you're my friend. That you'll come to me if I need you."
"I won't come to you, Melody," he said. "That's over. And I don't want you coming here anymore, or phoning, or sending telegrams, no matter what kind of trouble you're in. You understand? Do you? I want you out of my life, and when you're gone, I'm going to forget you as quick as I can, because, lady, you are one hell of a bad memory." Melody cried out as if he had struck her.
"No," she said. "No, don't say that. Remember me. You have to. I'll leave you alone. I promise I will. I'll never see you again, but say you'll remember me."
She stood up abruptly.
"I'll go right now," she said. "If you want me to go, I'll go. But make love to me first, Ted. Please. I want to give you something to remember me by."
She smiled a lascivious little smile and began to struggle out of her halter top, and Ted felt sick. He set down his glass with a bang. "You're crazy," he said. "You ought to get professional help, Melody. But I can't give it to you, and I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm going out for a walk. I'll be gone a couple of hours. You be gone when I get back." Ted started for the door. Melody stood looking at him, her halter in her hand. Her breasts looked small and shrunken, and the left one had a tattoo on it that he'd never noticed before. There was nothing even vaguely desirable about her.
she whimpered.
I just wanted to give you something to remember me by, she said.
Ted slammed the door. It was midnight when he returned, drunk and surly, resolved that if Melody was still there, he would call the police and that would be the end of that. Jack was behind the desk, having just gone on duty. Ted stopped and gave him hell for having admitted Melody that morning, but the doorman denied it vehemently.
Wasn't nobody got in, Mr. Sorelli. I don't let in anyone without buzzing up. You ought to know that. I've been here 6 years, and I never let in nobody without buzzing up.
Ted reminded him forcefully about the Jehovah's Witness, and they ended up in a shouting match. Finally, Ted stormed away and took the elevator up to the 32nd floor. There was a drawing taped to his door. He blinked at it furiously for a moment, then snatched it down. It was a cartoon, a caricature of Melody. Not the Melody he'd seen today, but the Melody he'd known in college. Sharp, funny, pretty. When they'd been roommates, Melody had always illustrated her notes with little cartoons of herself. He was surprised that she could still draw this well. Beneath the face, she'd printed a message.
I left you something to remember me by.
Ted scowled down at the cartoon, wondering whether he should keep it or not. His own hesitation made him angry. He crumbled the paper in his hand and fumbled for his keys. At least she's gone, he thought, and maybe for good. If she left the note, it meant that she'd gone. He was rid of her for another couple of years at least. He went inside, tossed the crumbled ball of paper across the room towards a wastebasket, and smiled when it went in. 2 points, he said loudly to himself, drunk and self-satisfied. He went to the bar and began to mix himself a drink. But something was wrong. Ted stopped stirring his drink and listened. The water was running, he realized. She'd left the water running in the bathroom. Christ, he said, and then an awful thought hit him. Maybe she hadn't gone after all. Maybe she was still in the bathroom, taking a shower or something, freaked out of her mind, crying, whatever. Melody, he shouted. No answer. The water was running, all right. It couldn't be anything else. But she didn't answer.
Melody, are you still here? He yelled. Answer, damn it!
Silence. He put down his drink and walked to the bathroom. The door was closed. Ted stood outside. The water was definitely running.
Melody, he said loudly. Are you in there? Melody!
Nothing. Ted was beginning to be afraid. He reached out and grasped the doorknob. It turned easily in his hand. The door hadn't been locked. Inside, the bathroom was filled with steam. He could hardly see, but he made out that the shower curtain was drawn. The shower was running full blast, and judging from the amount of steam, it must be scalding. Ted stepped back and waited for the steam to dissipate.
Melody? He said softly.
There was no reply.
Shit, he said.
He tried not to be afraid. She only talked about it, he told himself. She'd never really do it. The ones who talk about it never do it. He'd read that somewhere. She was just doing this to frighten him. He took 2 quick strides across the room and yanked back the shower curtain. She was there, wreathed in steam, water streaming down her naked body. She wasn't stretched out in the tub at all. She was sitting up, crammed in sideways near the faucets, looking very small and pathetic. Her position seemed half-fetal. The needle spray had been directed down at her hands. She'd opened her wrists with his razor blades and tried to hold them under the water, but it hadn't been enough. She'd slit the veins crosswise, and everybody knew the only way to do it was lengthwise. So she'd used the razor elsewhere, and now she had two mouths, and both of them were smiling at him. Smiling. The shower had washed away most of the blood. There were no stains anywhere, but the second mouth below her chin was still red and dripping. Trickles oozed down her chest, over the flower tattooed on her breast, and the sprays of the shower caught them and washed them away. Her hair hung down over her cheeks, limp and wet. She was smiling. She looked so happy. The steam was all around her. She'd been in there for hours, he thought. She was very clean. Ted closed his eyes. It didn't make any difference. He still saw her. He would always see her. He opened them again. Melody was still smiling. He reached across her and turned off the shower, getting the sleeve of his shirt soaked in the process. Numb, he fled back into the living room. God, he thought. God! I have to call someone. I have to report this. I can't deal with this. He decided to call the police. He lifted the phone and hesitated with his finger poised over the buttons. The police won't help, he thought. He punched for Jill. When he had finished telling her, it grew very silent on the other end of the phone. My God, she said at last. How awful. Can I do anything? Come over, he said. Right away. He found the drink he'd set down, took a hurried sip from it. Jill hesitated. Look, Ted, I'm not very good at dealing with corpses, she said. Why don't you come over here? I don't want to... Well, you know, I don't think I'll ever shower at your place again. Jill, he said, stricken. I need someone right now. He laughed, a frightened, uncertain laugh. Come over here, she urged. I can't just leave it there, he said. Well, don't, she said. Call the police. They'll take it away. Come over afterwards. Ted called the police.
If this is your idea of a joke, it isn't funny, the patrolman said. His partner was scowling.
Joke, Ted said.
There's nothing in your shower, the patrolman said. I ought to take you down to the station house.
Nothing in the shower? Ted repeated, incredulous.
Leave him alone, Sam, the partner said. He's stinko, can't you tell? Ted rushed past them both into the bathroom.
The tub was empty.
Empty.
He knelt and felt the bottom of it. Dry. Perfectly dry. But his shirt sleeve was still damp.
No, he said.
No. He rushed back out to the living room. The two cops watched him with amusement. Her suitcase was gone from its place by the door. The dishes had all been run through the dishwasher, no way to tell if anyone had made pancakes or not. Ted turned the wastebasket upside down, spilling out the contents all over his couch. He began to scrabble through the papers.
Go to bed and sleep it off, mister, the older cop said. You'll feel better in the morning. Come on, his partner said.
They departed, leaving Ted still pawing through the papers. No cartoon. No cartoon. No cartoon. Ted flung the empty wastebasket across the room, and it caromed off the wall with a ringing metallic clang. He took a cab to Jill's. It was near dawn when he sat up in bed suddenly, his heart thumping, his mouth dry with fear. Jill murmured sleepily.
Jill, he
he said, shaking her. She blinked up at him.
What? She said. What time is it, Ted? What's wrong?
She sat up, pulling up the blanket to cover herself.
Don't you hear it? Hear what?
She asked. He giggled.
Your shower is running.
That morning he shaved in the kitchen, even though there was no mirror. He cut himself twice. His bladder ached, but he would not go past the bathroom door, despite Jill's repeated assurances that the shower was not running. Damn it! He could hear it! He waited until he got to the office. There was no shower in the washroom there. But Jill looked at him strangely. At the office, Ted cleared his desk and tried to think. He was a lawyer. He had a good analytical mind. He tried to reason it out. He drank only coffee, lots of coffee. No suitcase, he thought. Jack hadn't seen her. No corpse, no cartoon. No one had seen her. The shower was dry. No dishes. He'd been drinking. But not all day. Only later, after dinner. Couldn't be the drinking. Couldn't be. No cartoon. He was the only one who'd seen her. No cartoon. I left you something to remember me by. He'd crumpled up her cable and flushed her away. 2 years ago. Nothing in the shower. He picked up his phone. Billy, he said, get me a newspaper in Des Moines, Iowa. Any newspaper, I don't care. When he finally got through, the woman who tended the morgue was reluctant to give him any information. But she softened when he told her he was a lawyer and needed the information for an important case. The obituary was very short. Melody was identified only as a massage parlor employee. She'd killed herself in her shower. Thank you, Ted said. He set down the receiver. For a long time he sat staring out of his window. He had a very good view. He could see the lake and the soaring tower of the Standard Oil Building. He pondered what to do next. There was a thick knot of fear in his gut. He could take the day off and go home. But the shower would be running at home, and sooner or later he would have to go in there. He could go back to Jill's, if Jill would have him. She'd seemed awfully cool after last night. She'd recommended a shrink to him as they shared a cab to the office. She didn't understand. No one would understand. Unless. He picked up the phone again, searching through his circular file. There was no card, no number. They'd drifted that far apart. He buzzed for Billy again. Get me through to Random House in New York City, he said. To Mr. Michael Engelhart. He's an editor there. But when he finally connected, the voice on the other end of the line was strange and distant. Mr. Sorelli, were you a friend of Michael's? Or one of his authors? Ted's mouth was dry.
A friend, he said.
Isn't Michael in? I need to talk to him. It's urgent. I'm afraid Michael's no longer with us, the voice said. He had a nervous breakdown less than a week ago.
Is he?
He's alive. They took him to a hospital, I believe. You know, maybe I can find you the number.
No, Ted said. No, that's quite all right.
He hung up. Phoenix Directory Assistance had no listing for an Ann K.
Of course not, he thought.
She was married now. He tried to remember her married name. It took him a long time. Something Polish, he thought. Finally, it came to him. He hadn't expected to find her at home. It was a school day, after all. But someone picked up the phone on the third ring. "Hello," he said. "Anne, is that you? This is Ted, in Chicago. Anne, I've got to talk to you. It's about Melody. Anne, I need your help." He was breathless. There was a giggle.
"Anne isn't here right now, Ted," Melody said. "She's off at school, and then she's got to visit her husband. They're separated, you know. But she promised to come back by 8.
"Melody," he said. "Of course, I don't know if I can believe her. You three were never very good about promises. But maybe she'll come back, Ted. I hope so. I want to leave her something to remember me by."